Hi, and welcome to the How Not to Think podcast, the podcast that gets you thinking about your thinking, decision making, how you react, and all those sorts of important things. Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and I'm delighted today to have with me from the state of Illinois, Thalia Monet, who is an author. Wrote a very interesting book about family conflict that actually has a lot to say about our relationships, how we can misperceive things, and the price of doing so. Welcome, Thalia.
Hi, Howard. Thank you for having me.
No, always great to chat with you and talk more about your book and lots of other things. Tell the listeners a little bit about, you know, how you got to be where you are today.
Okay, so in 2009, I came across this article in Essence magazine. It was an article regarding a writing contest that they were having at that time. I was interested in entering that short story contest. But it was 48 hours prior to the submission deadline. But that didn't stop me. I still attempted to write a short story based on the contest guidelines within that 48 hours, which I was successful at doing. However, I missed a submission, the online submission deadline by 2 minutes. So I wasn't able to enter my piece for that contest. I did let people read the short story, and a lot of them liked it. The number one question I had was, is this based on my life? Which it is not. It's fiction. And again, it was based around what the contest guidelines were, which was writing a story about an African-American woman with a struggle.
Okay.
So based on my past experiences with miscommunication, I decided to make the theme about miscommunication and the effects of not having effective communication. So over the years, I put it aside for a while, even though people were asking me to write more. They were asking me, where's the rest of it? And I had to keep telling them it was for a short story contest. So there was only up to 2,500 words that we could write. So I had to stay within that guideline. And I put the short story down for years. And I decided to pick it back up and started writing about it, I believe in 2019. And the more I started writing the story, the more it started to develop. And not realizing it at the time, a lot of what I wrote in this short story, well, some of the things I wrote in this short story is a mirror image of my own struggle with my journey of finding my own birth father who had never been a part of my life, as opposed to the main character, Queen. Her father had always been a part of her life. She knew who he was. They were in a close-knit family, he, her, and her mom. I didn't have that with my birth father because I didn't even know who he was. And I've been on this journey off and on over the years searching for him. And knowing this about my journey, that was the furthest thing from my mind. So I thought when I was writing this book, Why the Secrets. So I wrote the book and I published it during the pandemic 2020.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. And it's a really compelling story, and I think a lot of people would be able to relate to it, because it is about, well, it's about a number of things, but it is about miscommunication. It is about jumping to the wrong conclusions and assumptions without checking them out, and how that leads you potentially and a family down a very dark track that doesn't need to happen if people have the courage to be honest with each other.
True. That's very true. And in this story, there's, and thank you for that, Howard, you said it perfectly. But in this story, it does dive into all those different things. And what this young lady had to go through from a young age, Queen, wondering where her father was, who had always been there, and not being able to say, okay, I know where my dad is, you know, even as a child, as a young child, things didn't work out between mom and dad. They had problems. She just didn't have anything to go on because her mom was never open enough with her to say anything once she asked about her dad. She was just never given an explanation, which led her to start searching for him herself when she was old enough to do so. But even on that journey of searching for her father, there were other things going on within her family who was always close, even with her maternal side of the family. So the whole family was being destroyed by this secret, by this one secret. And Queen's mom, Linda, she thought she was protecting her family, but she was actually doing more harm than good by keeping this secret. So I'm hoping that when readers read this, when anyone who reads this book, Why the Secrets, that they will be able to say, you know, maybe I should have this conversation. As difficult and as painful as it might be, I should have this conversation because it is causing more hurt, more damage than good, which is the opposite of what happened in this story. But I think a lot of several other family members learned a good lesson.
Right, yeah.
It's so easy, and I have a personal story about that, it's so easy to justify saying nothing. Mm-hmm. Painful. So easy to justify it. Actually, interestingly, I had a different sort of experience, but it was still based on, you know, what was really my motivation. And this focused around my dad's health. And he had gone in, they had discovered some colon cancer. He, you know, they treated him. Well, this was, you know, 40 plus years ago. So the treatment was a little different, but they treated him. And then he went back into hospital. And even though, you know, my doctorate, I was a PhD, my mom and my sister sort of designated me as the one to liaise with the doctors. And I went to see the doctors after he had been admitted, you know, a second time to check out on him. And they said, I'm sorry, he's probably only got, you know, a few months or a year left. Now, the justification I used was that my dad was a very stressed out guy. You know, it was tough for him to change a light bulb. He's a really smart guy. He had zero education, but he did pretty well for himself. But he could get very stressed over small things. And my concern was telling him that he only had a few months left would have probably shortened his life. And at least that was my justification. And he'd be freaked out. So I made the decision not to tell him or my mother and sister about his prognosis. What I did say was, well, he seems to be doing okay, but you never know. This could come back and get him at any time. So I gave the message that, you know, treat every day as it comes, but I didn't say he's only got a few months left to live. And they did use that time well. You know, my mom and him went on a vacation. They visited family and friends, and he had died within the year. And the question that has always bothered me was that the right decision? Should I have been more, quotation mark, courageous and addressed it with all of them? you know, subsequently my mom and sister said, no, that was fine, that was okay, it worked out okay. But still that lingers in how do you balance it? And it's a, I think it's a good example of your story, really, or the underpinning of your story is when you have something to say that is potentially very hurtful, very painful, you know, could lead to all sorts of things. Do you use that as a justification for not saying it and using, you know, some other form of communication or avoiding it altogether? I think, and I was only in my 20s when that happened, I think if that were to happen today, or if I was the person I am today then, I'm not sure, but I think I probably would have done something differently.
Yeah, because with age came maturity and other experiences. And then you had time to think back on that situation of how you could have handled things differently. I just had a situation yesterday with a relative on my paternal side regarding my journey in finding my birth father, which is her uncle. And I was upset with her because I fortunately did find my birth father, which is her brother's, her father's brother. But I could have found him a few years ago had she helped me and did what I asked. And she gave me her reasoning for not doing so. And at that time, it didn't make sense to me. And she and I, we talked Saturday. We talked about it Saturday. And she told me again why she didn't do what I asked her to do regarding connecting me with her uncle, who I rightfully thought was my dad. So she and I had that conversation, and that opened us up to communicating again. Because I met her 3 years ago, and we knew that we were related, but we didn't know that we were first cousins.
Right.
So when we talked Saturday, she was like, so we're first cousins. Yeah, our fathers are brothers. And I told her, I said, I was so angry with you because I went through so much over the last 3 years. And, you know, all of that could have been avoided had you connected me with him like I asked. And mm-hmm. When I told you that I would reach out to him myself, you asked me not to. And I did back off. Because in my mind, I was thinking maybe somebody think I want something, mm-hmm. or maybe this new revelation might mess up his family. Mm-hmm. But I had time to think about it over the years, and on my journey and coming closer to finding my birth father, I just got more excited and more excited. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't been this close to finding him since I was 13 years old, and I initially asked my mom about my birth father. Mm-hmm. So I had this person helping me, this volunteer helping me. And I told her when I found him on Facebook, I said, I don't know if he will respond to me because I know that there's a lot of people who's out there looking for either a mom or a dad, a birth mom or a dad. And yeah. when they contact them, the birth mom or birth dad wants nothing to do with them and even tell them not to contact them again. So I didn't know how he would react to me reaching out to him. And I was messaging this volunteer who's been wonderful. She's been relentless. Her and one of my cousins, they've been relentless in helping me. And I'm talking to her, and I told her, I said, I don't know how he would react with this information. I knew that either him or his brother was my birth father. So I rushed out to him and I messaged him. And as soon as I messaged him, he responded immediately. And I told her, I was like, oh my God, he responded. Mm-hmm. He responded to me. But from the moment I contacted him, he didn't know that he was my birth father. He thought his brother was my birth father. But from the moment I contacted him, he was nothing but caring, very warm and welcoming. And, you know, I asked him if I can ask him some questions, and he said, absolutely. He said, you know, I would do whatever I can to help you. And he meant that. And that's been our journey for the last, since May. So mm-hmm. the past 5 months, he's the best communicator I know. Right. Yes. He kept me up to date with everything. I asked him, are you open to taking a DNA test with me? And without hesitation, he said, absolutely. And, you know, I said, what's your address? He gave me the address, and I had the test sent to him. And unfortunately, it wasn't able to be processed the first sample. And they had to send him another kit. And so we had to wait again. But again, he kept me up to date. Every time he received a notification, he messaged me and said, okay, this is what I received. And any questions I asked him about the family, he answered those questions for me. And if he didn't know the answer, he would reach out to another family member and ask them. And it's just been really wonderful. So I'm like, I don't know if he's my birth father or my uncle, but either or, I've hit the jackpot because he's a great person.
Yeah.
And, a week before we got our, we received his results back, he said to me, he said, if I'm your uncle, I will accept you. He said, if I'm your dad, I will accept you. And I said, okay. So I messaged him a couple of mornings ago, and I said, you're my bio father. You're my birth father. He's like, okay. He's been wonderful. So I'm looking forward to whatever relationship we have, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's great. The story ends well. Mm-hmm. You know, potentially, well, years. And as you rightly say, there are a lot of people in this situation who have the same question. Who is my birth dad? Or who's my mom even? Right. So that, you know, happens a lot. It's a very, very relevant story that, you know, pinpoints the problems we have in making tough moral decisions.
Right. Yeah. And even with keeping secrets, because for me, my mom was very forthcoming initially when I was 13 years old and asked, but the several times that I asked her after that, nothing. She didn't tell me anything. And I asked her, the most recent time I asked her was 1 year prior to her passing, and she still didn't tell me anything. So when I was in a hospital in the family waiting area and they announced her dead, not gone, I broke down. I broke down crying because I said, she's taking us to the grave, you know. And I just wanted that information so that I could find him. And but I didn't stop. I never stopped. And I would never stop. I didn't know if I would find my birth father, but I knew that I would never stop searching for him, even if all I found were memories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I knew that I would never stop searching for him. So I'm happy that I got this happy ending. I'm happy that he's been so open and so accepting, and he seems very transparent. And I just wish that everyone who's searching for their birth mother or birth father could have that experience, because I know of so many other stories that it's heartbreaking, and it almost makes you want to cry, because it's like they're innocent. The children are innocent.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and they grow up not know who their birth father or mother is, and they want to know. So they're carrying all this with them for years. The same as I have. I don't feel like I suffered anything, but for me, over the years, there was a lot of frustration and just curiosity and confusion.
Mm-hmm.
But I have more clarity now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have more clarity now, and I can have those conversations with him. And he's just open to talking about whatever. Yeah, anything I ask him, we have those conversations.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really good. Kudos to him for being so honest and accepting and loving. I mean, that's what you would hope. Yes. Unfortunately, a lot of times that doesn't happen.
Right.
You know? And it's problematic. And it's also problematic, I think, for the children too.
Yes.
My wife was adopted at a very, very young age as a baby, basically. And, grew up with lovely parents. They were just awesome. But she always had in her mind, I wonder who my, birth mom and birth dad were.
Mm-hmm.
But like a lot of adopted people, she did not want to what she considered to be potentially damage the relationship with her quotation mark adopted parents by going and seeking out who her biological parents were. And to this day, well, she's never going to find that out now anyway. And there are some restrictive laws, based on adoption from different states where you actually can't find, at least going through any sort of legal channel, you can't find who your birth parents were. So I've seen that firsthand. In her case, her adopted parents were so awesome that it could have been much more problematic for her.
Right. And Howard, I want to say this to you. There is help out there for your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a Facebook group that I'm a part of, and the volunteer who helped me, we connected in that group, and there's a lot of adoptees in there. And that group is the most supportive group that I've ever been a part of. They have what you call search angels in there. And these people are truly angels. Mm-hmm. They are genealogy fanatics. So they help people like your wife and like myself find their birth parents and find that lineage and find those half siblings that's out there. It's free. It's free. Mm-hmm. We can't, even if we wanted to pay them, we can't pay them, because in that group, they just want everybody to help each other. So there's help out there for your wife if she's interested in even finding anything out about where she come from and her birth parents and, any siblings that she might have out there, or nieces and nephews. In that group, there's a lot of adoptees in there just like your wife. And some of them, they had that same concern. Some of the adoptees, their adopted parents was very open to them finding their birth mother and birth father. But some of the adoptees, they waited until after their adopted parents passed because they had the same concern as your wife. They didn't want to cause any hurt or anything to these people who raised them, who's been wonderful to them. And I get that, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so do I too. What's the name of the Facebook group?
It's called DNA Detectives.
Okay.
Yeah. So I came across that group because I was watching an episode of 2020. And there's this awesome woman on there. Her name is Cece Moore. And she has helped correct cases through DNA for murderers, rapists, but she also helps people find their parents. And in this episode, she was helping three different individuals, three unrelated cases, find their birth parents. And I said, she is awesome. And she was like on top of everything. And I was like, this woman is awesome. I'm going to reach out to her, and I hope that I can afford her.
Yep.
So I Googled her, and what I came across, she said something like, she has a Facebook group. Go there first. There's free help there. I said, free? Let me check this group out. And I went there, and oh my God, it's just like heaven sent. I give that Facebook group to anybody who's out there looking for a loved one, because in that group, they will help you find them. And they help these people, and they're really, really great. And on my search, I've learned so much with being in that group because everybody's just helpful. It's a really supportive group. And with what I've learned over the past 3 years, and as well as what I've learned in this group, I was able to help 4 different people find their birth parents, but I couldn't help myself. I said, what is going on here? I'm able to help everybody but myself. And one of my cousins, who I met on Ancestry on his journey, he said, Athalia, he said, don't worry. He said, once it's safe to do so, I'm going to Mississippi. And I'm going to, he said he was going to the library or something because there's certain records that we weren't able to obtain online. And I said, okay, thank you. 2 days after he and I had this conversation, a relative reached out to me on one of the DNA websites. And she asked me if I can share my medical information with her. So I gave her access to it. And I went through her profile, looking at her family surnames, and I saw the surname that we've been searching for months. And I asked her, how was she related to this surname? And she told me she was related on her paternal side. She told me who her father and grandfather was. And so the person who I thought was my great-grandfather, I asked her if she knew him, and she said she didn't. And I said, can you ask her dad? And she said she will ask her parents. She said, I'm going to their house tomorrow morning. I will ask them. And she said, also, we had our last family reunion 3 years ago. She said there was a booklet that they gave us with a lot of family history and photos in it. She said, would you like me to make a couple of copies for you? I said, absolutely. So we exchanged phone numbers. The next morning, she took a screenshot of every page in that book, that family reunion book. And I just thought I hit the lottery.
Oh, my God.
So I text this relative who's been helping me, and then the volunteer that I met in a DNA detectives group. And I told him, I said, look at what this DNA match sent me. And they would seem like they was more excited than me. And we both, all three of us individually, we reevaluated the notes that we had. And using the information that we got out of this book that she had given us. And I said, okay, these are the people I came up with as my great-grandparents. What do you all have? We all had the same thing. I was like, these are my great-grandparents then. Okay. So two of the sons, I said, it has to be one of these two sons because all the DNA matches that we had come across on our search, and even prior to me connecting with them, all fell under this family surname. And I said, whoever my father is, he is either closely connected to this surname or he's a son in this surname. And he was. And that's how we found him. And I already strongly assumed that he was the one based on the name that my mom gave me. I just couldn't remember his last name that my mom gave me, but I never forgot his first name. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember his last name, and I couldn't remember his brother name that my mom gave me when I was 13 years ago, over 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I never forgot his first name. Mm-hmm. And he was one of two sons that we came up with. And he's also the uncle who I asked his niece if she can connect us. So all the pieces started fitting, and I was like, I came this far and I've gone through all of this, I'm just gonna be brave and reach out to him. What's the worst can happen? He can ignore me, he can block me, that's the worst that can happen. And he did the total opposite of what I expected. So I would encourage your wife and anybody else to join this group. They can help her, and like I said, she doesn't have to pay anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What other advice would you have? Obviously, getting the right sort of support is important. But what other advice would you give to people who were, for example, in your situation?
Don't stop. Don't stop searching. You have to have a lot of patience. You have to have a lot of patience on this journey. A lot of research. Research, research, research. Follow the DNA. Follow the DNA because DNA doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the information that some people are given is different than what DNA says, but we know the DNA is more truthful than whatever information we've had. having a nice support system, having a nice support system is really big, because people who's not on that journey and who haven't experienced that, they don't understand. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So having a nice support system would be good. And try not to take anything personal. Mm-hmm. Try not to take anything personal, because sometimes people, they have these secrets buried, and sometimes when people reach out to them looking for their mom or dad, it opens up a Pandora's box. So, and it can be hurtful to the child, but it has nothing to do with them. They did nothing wrong. So don't take it personal if you're rejected. And another thing I would like to say, and this is based off of what I've seen with other people in this DNA group, it goes back to me saying have patience, because sometimes when someone reaches out to a parent or to a half sibling saying, okay, we're on this website, we're on DNA Ancestry, or I came across you on 23andMe DNA website and it says that you're my half sister, or you're my half brother, or you're my uncle or aunt. Sometimes they need time to process it, because you're giving them information that they knew nothing about. They didn't know that you existed prior to you contacting them. So sometimes they shut down, mm-hmm. and they don't respond immediately. And sometimes they respond in an unkind way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've heard in the group that I'm in, sometimes they need a minute. Sometimes a couple of times people, they block that person, but then they unblocked them and contacted them and started asking them questions. Sometimes they didn't block them, but they ignored them. Sometimes they've told that person, don't contact me anymore. But then they wind up contacting them after several months. So sometimes that other person, they just need time to process this brand new information you just gave them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's all good advice. And I think you're right. People will take time to process this if they had no clue about it, or it may be something they have been thinking about on and off for years but mm-hmm. haven't really wanted to address. So there's all sorts of things you can't assume you know what is going on in that person's head. You just can't, and only an authentic conversation will allow that to happen. Up to that point, it's just all assumption on all sides.
And that's true.
It's not going to lead very well.
That's very true, Howard. And that just goes back to having that open and honest communication, just so we can eliminate the assumptions, and just so we can hopefully eliminate any hurt or confusion or resentment. That just goes back to having an open and honest communication, effective communication.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And bringing this back to your book, what is, which when you started, you really weren't, and you had this as part of your history, but you were nowhere into the deep discovery of it that you did subsequently, correct?
That's very correct. Actually, this book was published and released way before I got to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a conversation with someone who read the book. she asked me, does this book have anything to do with my life? Is this nonfiction? And I told her, this is all fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I told her this started as a short story back in 2009. I wrote around the topic of a short story contest. And so this has nothing to do with my life, and which she didn't believe. So during our conversation, she kept digging and kept coming back to that saying, but you're so exact and so on point with certain things. And I said, it just came out as I was writing it. I said, I'm telling you, this has nothing to do with me. And she said something again to the effect of, it just seems so real. And I said, well, if it seems real, I did my job.
Well, I mean, that's where I was going with that. As a writer myself and as a ghostwriter and a co-writer, people approach me all the time to write books on subjects that I really know nothing about. and I won't do that. Yeah, I don't see the point, because when you're writing a book, or if you're even hiring somebody to write a book, they have to have content knowledge. They have to know. They have to have the experience, right?
Right.
They have to know at the heart of your story. They have to know all the elements of it. Otherwise, they're the wrong match for you.
Exactly.
And clearly, you're a great example of that, because even though consciously, perhaps you weren't, you saw this contest and thought it would be cool to do it, and none of this was really in your head, maybe subconsciously, but certainly not consciously, but you do have the ideal background for somebody to write this story. And regardless of how conscious you were while you were writing it, of all of that background, it still shows that you know what you're writing about. And when I say no, I don't mean facts. I mean, you get to the heart of it, of what it's really like. And that's why it's such a good book.
Thank you, Howard. Yes, you made a lot of good points. And I did write it subconsciously. But when this woman kept pressing me, I told her, I said, honestly, I am on a journey. I said, I can relate to a couple of the family members in this story, because I'm on a journey myself of finding my own birth father. I said, my story is different than the main character, Queen's. I've never known my birth father, but I am searching for him, and I have been searching for him for many years. But that wasn't the basis for me writing this book. It has nothing to do with that. I said, this started out years ago, right. 2009.
Right. Yeah, so it isn't, factually your story.
Right.
You're an ideal person to write it, because at various levels, conscious, subconscious, you've been dealing with this problem.
Yes, yeah. That's very correct.
And that's what honestly makes the writing excel, when you have somebody who is writing from the heart, and that comes through. And it comes through in your book, the frustration of the main character, Queen, as she struggles with this. So the book is Why the Secrets, Athalia Monet. And people can get this on Amazon, I presume.
Right, Amazon. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Google Reads, Goodreads, Indie Books, Books a Million.
Yeah, anywhere. You can buy a book.
Yes.
So what's next for you?
What's next? I'm working on my second book. I'm also working on a product that I launched during the pandemic as well. It's a pouch that I designed and patented. It's a hairbrush pouch. So I'm hoping that it really booms during this Christmas season. I'm focusing on that currently, because I that product that I designed, it was designed out of a need. I didn't say, okay, let me think of something that I want to design. Okay, this is my idea. I actually was looking for this type of product, which is a hairbrush pouch that accommodates different size hairbrushes or combs, as opposed to normal hairbrushes or cases that only accommodates one size, one shape, hairbrush or comb. Mine accommodates a blow dryer brush. It can accommodate a paddle brush. It can accommodate a rake tail comb, a rat tail comb. So although my product is one design, one shape, it can comfortably accommodate either one of these shapes or sizes, hairbrushes or combs. So I'm excited about that, and the traction is picking up with that, and that's because I've been investing more time in it. But I'm really excited about my next book that I'm writing, which will be based around my journey of finding my father, my birth father.
Well, that's great. On the hairbrush product, I'm afraid you're talking to the wrong person. I don't But that's great. So wait a minute. That's, so where do people go to find out about that, your product?
So they can go to www.pouches, and that's P as in Paul, O-U-C-H-E-S, by Alahta, A-L-A-H-T-A.com. Or to make it easy for anybody, you can simply go to www.athalia, A-T-H-A-L-I-A, Monet, M-O-N-A-E, not M-O-N-E-T.com. And there will be a link that will take you to my website where my hairbrush pouch is available, or it also has a listing of wherever, all the different locations or websites where you can purchase my book, have inspirational t-shirts. So all things Athalia is on that website to make it easy.
Yeah, I like the inspirational t-shirts. Yeah.
Yes. One of them is love destroys hate. That's my favorite saying. Love does destroy hate.
Yeah. Yep. Excellent. Well, this has been awesome. So people can find you, as you said, at athaliamonet.com and get all the information they want, and presumably reach out to you too. Also, just to remind you that Athalia did mention DNA detectives, right?
Yes.
Facebook group. So if you're in this situation too of searching for a parent, that might be a great group to investigate and join. Great talking with you as usual, Athalia.
And here, Howard.
Any last thoughts or comments?
I just don't give up. Don't give up. It's a tough journey. And if you have to go it alone, don't let that stop you. But I will say, joining DNA detectives, you will never be alone.
Right.
You will never be alone in that group. That group is so supportive and they're so helpful. And it's not only the search angels or the volunteers that's helpful. It's the members. Everyone's trying to help everyone because we've all learned a lot on our journey. So we're able to, if a certain person has a question and we have the answer to it, or we have tools or resources that can assist that person, everybody just jump in and give, you know, whatever it is they know. So you will never be alone in that group. Ever. And it's a no judgment zone too. Let me make that clear. It's no judgment.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, Athalia. You're an inspiration.
Thank you.
Walk the walk. And you've written the book too. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's next, but I really appreciate you coming on the show. Also, before we go, you have a podcast too, right?
I have a podcast. Thank you, Howard. So I have a podcast, this inspirational podcast. It's Relevant Talk with Athalia Monet. And the theme of that podcast is inspiration, encouragement, empowerment, informative. So any guest comes to that show, they have something that will either inspire you or encourage you or empower you or provide some type of information or resources that's informative that you may be able to use or pass on to someone else. But it's positive and it's uplifting.
Yeah, it's great too. You were gracious enough to have me as a guest, so I really enjoyed that. Okay, well, thank you again.
Thank you for having me, Howard.
You're always welcome. And Why the Secrets. Go check it out, folks. See you next time.